Hej och välkomna till ett specialavsnitt av Astra-podden, en podd om samhälle, kultur och feminism. Det här avsnittet ger vi ut för att fira releasen av migrationstemanumret av Astra. Gästen idag heter Yasmine Ibrahim. Hon skrev en artikel i migrationsnumret som heter "No one is born a refugee, on the politics of identity and the importance of language." Ni kommer snart få höra en utförligare presentation av Yasmine. Det här avsnittet kommer att vara på engelska och vi kommer beröra teman som femonationalism, Sara Ahmeds teorier om tacksamhet och otacksamhet, känslor som en del av feministisk forskning och kunskapsproduktion, feministiska, postkoloniala och dekoloniala förhållningssätt till migration. Vi pratar om rasism och hur den är synlig i asylsökningsprocesser och ansökan om uppehållstillstånd i Finland. Och framförallt så pratar vi övergripande om migration. I slutet av avsnittet skämtar jag om att vi alltid tar allting så personligt. Och för att det här inte ska låta som ett konstigt internskämt kan jag kontextualisera det med att Yasmine Ibrahim alltså i sin artikel i Astras migrationsnummer berättar om hur hennes forskning bemöts med just kommentarer om att du måste sluta ta allting så personligt när hon berättat om den rasism och islamofobi som hennes informanter har bemött i Finland. Jag heter Elliot Lundegård och jag tror att det är dags att vi kör igång.
Welcome to the Astra podcast. It's the 19th of February 2021. And all live events are currently happening online. So instead of having a classic in-person release party for the migration issue of Astra, we're doing a podcast with one of its writers. My name is Elliot, and my pronouns are they, them, and I am the editor-in-chief at Astra. And I am so happy to introduce you to our guest here today, Yasmine Ibrahim. Hello and welcome, Yasmine.
Hi.
Yasmine wrote her master's thesis in gender studies at Åbo Akademi in 2019 about women navigating their feelings towards Finland. It was based on interviews with Arabs seeking asylum. Today she works as the equity program officer at Feminist Culture House in Helsinki, where she is curating a training program of practical tools that arts organizations of any size can implement when working towards diversity and inclusion. Yasmine, do you want to add something to this presentation of you?
I'm very excited to be here and to be talking with you, Elliot. I would just like to add that my pronouns are she and her.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk to you as well. It's so nice to have you. So would you like to start with saying something about how feelings were a part of feminist knowledge production in your master's thesis? Like, how did you work with that?
Definitely. So the entire research was focused on feelings. This was inspired by Sara Ahmed's Cultural Politics of Emotions, as well as The Promise of Happiness. And it was namely specifically focused on bad emotions by who we consider in Finland to be rejected and unwanted bodies, which in this case are the bodies of asylum seekers. So for me, it was about taking their emotions as realities and as knowledges that we shouldn't doubt, or that it's not up for us to doubt, whoever us is as Finnish people living in Finland or Finnish people. So yeah, this is the entire thesis was focused on feelings.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. And how was this met by the academic context in which you conducted this research? Were there like patterns of white solidarity when you presented these migrant women's feelings or asylum-seeking women's feelings as knowledge and truth? Or did you meet like white paternalism or gaslighting? Or how was this met?
Definitely. It was met with a lot of resistance. Me living also in a body as a brown Arab woman, conducting this research that centers the voices of Arabic women as well. Not only was the resistance towards the research, but it was in many ways towards me. So this was through assuming that I don't have a clear understanding of Finnish society. I have a misunderstanding of what they were trying, that my participants, that is, are trying to communicate with me. This went all the way from a lot of resistance within the organization where I was conducting my research to my supervisors who were supposed to guide me through the process, but instead were more consumed by how my research would present Finland as a place that rejects asylum seekers.
Yeah, I see. So in this thesis, you also write about the feelings gratefulness and ungratefulness in the context of migration and asylum seeking. Can you talk a bit about the role those feelings play? I think that is also from Sara Ahmed, right?
Exactly, definitely, yeah. So it was very interesting because it seemed that ungratefulness was the only way in my research that was clear that it was a time that the women took for themselves to as self-care or as actually being themselves, whether that looked like not reacting to specifically white Finnish women who asked them and demanded them to be grateful, not participating in activities that require gratefulness, and in many other ways.
When you say that about self-care, do you feel like, or did it seem like this created some kind of space of agency for the interviewees?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. In a lot of ways, it didn't sound like they were aware of this, but whenever we would have, because keeping in mind that I was in the organization as a researcher, but I was also engaging with activities that they do in the center. And so in a lot of ways, those activities were prioritizing the women's abilities to be grateful for having this space in Finland. And so whenever they would, for example, have notifications about bad decisions about their asylum process, or they would have very Islamophobic incidents happen towards them, the only way that they were able to have that agency and to be able to control the narrative was through expressing ungratefulness. So that was very interesting. And I thought that it's very important as well.
Yeah, really. And also jumping back to the previous question, right? I feel like I also want to give some feedback to that, how it's so interesting to be kind of distrusted because of your own like relationship with what you are conducting research on, instead of being trusted like because of that position. Because I think often in gender studies or anthropology, you know, we have this kind of, or that's my I have a bachelor degree in gender studies, and what I remember from talking about this kind of qualitative interview research is also that it's kind of good if you have a position as a researcher that is somewhat close to those you are interviewing, how that can be a strength rather than something that should be seen as a problem. or
Yeah, definitely. I think my position was very specific because I do not look like what people would assume an Arabic woman would look like. I don't sound like what people would assume in Finland an Arabic woman would sound like. And so while that did create like some bond, because I can, I'm bilingual in Arabic and English, and so I was conducting the research in Arabic, and I was also communicating with the women, with the participants in Arabic. So we were able to bond and to have a nice connection as well. But at the same time, it didn't stop the organization facilitators or the founders from asking me to, whether it's perform gratefulness for them or kind of in a way, not skew, but try to ask more questions focused on positive emotions because of how that would reflect on the organization, of course, and how that would ultimately affect their funding. And so this was a responsibility that fell on me.
Yeah, it's interesting how capitalism also always plays its part, like the funding part.
That's very true.
So I also wonder if you want to comment a bit upon like how asylum seeking processes differ depending on how one is racialized, like as well as on what citizenship one possesses when arriving in Finland. We know that race also plays its part in, yeah, when we're looking at the chances of getting asylum or residence permit in Finland. If you want to comment on your what you know about that.
Personally, having and being an immigrant in Finland, I can't think of any ways it's not visible in my life. Specifically now in the time of the pandemic, but in general, of course, the only issues about immigration that come to light have more to do with quote unquote skilled labor or professionals who are coming from other European countries or then just the West in general. And whenever they have bad experiences, these then prompt change in the xenophobic narrative in Finland and what opportunities are presented to, again, foreigners, those being people with Western passports. And of course, race plays a very, very, very important part of just starting from the borders of Finland to what opportunities are afforded to those people. To what documents they're able to attain so that they can actually begin living with the residence permit, whichever kind of permit that is in Finland. And so there isn't any aspect of the process where race or passport doesn't affect how you're treated. And of course, this is to say that there can be a combination of identities. You can have dark skin asylum seekers as well, who would face a lot more oppression and be more vulnerable to how the system is pinned up against them. And so,
it plays a huge part, like in all aspects.
Definitely.
So last spring, you were supposed to be part of a panel discussion on feminist/decolonial approaches to migration. It was hosted by Anaï Duong-Pedika at Åbo Akademi. So this panel was cancelled. I was supposed to have been there also and covered it for Astra, for the migration issue, actually. But since we have the time here now, I wonder if you want to talk a bit about what such approaches could look like the feminist post or decolonial approaches to migration.
Yeah, I was thinking about this question, and I was also thinking about how it needs to be situated of what's happening now, specifically with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the very racist, xenophobic narrative that's directed towards Black and brown bodies
mm-hmm.
in Finland. It's impossible to look at migration in Finland and feminist decolonial approaches to it without looking at who it affects the most and how it's portrayed in the media, as well as what kind of changes or what are they called? The statements that are put out from the government.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, just a very simple example that's coming to my head now is the entire idea that the people who are in Itäkeskus, very heavily immigrant populated area, are the ones who are causing all the breakouts of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the result or the reaction that this warrants, which was very much like my research, is that it warrants rejection, it warrants hate, it warrants rage, pushing those people to the side. Whereas there has been a lot of other spaces that are mostly occupied by white bodies, that the reaction that they warrant is misunderstanding or maybe lack of awareness or maybe need to increase the amount of vaccinations that or masks or sanitizers.
So excuses and like help and support.
And of course, in a much more serious way, this makes us look at ultimately what does the government and what does the Finnish narrative want from Black and brown bodies and Black and brown migrant bodies in Finland, because that is a very dangerous narrative.
Yeah. And also I'm thinking of vulnerability here, like looking at what groups are the most vulnerable instead of just talking about like guilt.
And of course, it meets the issue halfway through and not looks at it from a perspective where the bodies that, like you said, are more vulnerable are the bodies that are actually cleaning up and sanitizing and ensuring that the rest of the community can go about in safety in public.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's been very visible and clear during this pandemic year. Like who can work from home and who cannot, and who are like cleaning up the spaces where other people are to feel safe, etc.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe this leads us on to the question about femo-nationalism. You also wrote about femo-nationalism in your thesis. What did you find there?
I think looking at femo-nationalism from the outside versus how it came about in my research, it was very interesting to see how tied it is to the emotional reactions to my participants in my research. And so there was a lot of discussion about what women's rights means and what kind of, how did that affect also the understanding and definition of harassment towards women? So for example, of course, like women who wear the hijab in Finland are more likely to be harassed. And to me, this is... these are women who are being harassed at the end of the day. But in the interviews and with the participants and from what they had discussed about their experiences, these are never seen as a kind of harassment towards women. These are harassment because they are refugees or because they wear the hijab. And of course, from that point on, it makes it the narrative then becomes, well, it's an easy solution, take off the hijab, and then you're going to be a woman.
Exactly. Stop victimizing yourself. Yeah.
And so the solution is simple. And so, I also think like gratefulness was again very tied to feminist nationalism, because it appeared differently in different contexts. So there was a lot of experiences that the women had where they would be able to navigate their way around this feminist nationalist discourses and this very Islamophobic discussions or incidents that are pushed upon them just by performing gratefulness. And so it's, to me, when I say it now, it sounds like it's very tied again to safety, because you're more likely to be or you're more subjected to violence if you don't perform gratefulness.
Yeah, exactly. It has this disarming effect, I'm imagining, or that's also what I have experienced.
Yeah,
from my experiences of living in a marginalized body, that you can like disarm people with showing gratefulness.
Exactly. Yeah.
So these were the questions I had planned since before, but we have time to talk more if we like. Is there something you think that I have missed you would like to explore more?
Maybe I can talk a bit also about having done my research in Arabic and or having done my interviews in Arabic. And kind of the how that was for me a decolonial approach to doing research. Yeah, I think there was a lot of discussion about whether or not this is ethical, as I would be the one who is translating it. As well as there was from my supervisor a lot of criticism that it would be taking up a lot of space in the research, which I think was a very interesting feedback to have. Especially thinking about how just speaking Arabic in public in Finland can have a very detrimental effect in, on the safety of the person. And how a big reason why I'm even able to do this research is because I speak Arabic and the women are speaking to me in Arabic. We're both speaking Arabic. Another thing was that was very important to me and was very prioritized to me is the how vast the emotional capacity of the Arabic language is, which is not something that we talk about a lot because here it's just a very vilified language. But in reality, it's a very expansive and emotional language. But of course, this is not, this is, this would, you would have to be someone who understands the language. And for my supervisors, it just took a lot of space.
What so does I guess that this, even mean? What does it mean that it takes up space? What did your supervisor mean by that? I don't get it.
And it's very white-centered because if I took up space talking about how happy the women were, or if I took up space about small incidents of gratefulness instead of just focusing on unhappiness or rage or ungratefulness, this issue wouldn't even come up.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, yeah. And so I guess this was just another way where white solidarity was manifested just for me as a researcher. And I guess also another way is that I was asked to maybe include some examples of happy situations that the participants may have talked about. I'm putting this into context that my supervisors and the people that I was surrounded by in my research were people who are very interested in feminist knowledges and knowledge productions, and Sara Ahmed specifically, her work.
Yeah.
But they were also white and Finnish.
Yeah, exactly.
And it so, sorry.
It sounds to me almost like you were pushed to take stands or like take sides, choose sides somehow, like from the comments that you got from supervisors and inside of academia.
Definitely. And I had to make a lot of sacrifices about the quality of the work that I ended up having at the end because of having to make those decisions. There were a lot of situations that I know would have been important to include. But because my position isn't isolated from my program, and so I have to be evaluated by my supervisors, for example. Mm-hmm. And so having freedom to be able to criticize Finnish society was a topic of or a space for them to be fragile, very fragile. And
exactly. And I'm thinking here of like both ethical aspects, of course, but also like how do we guarantee that research is done and that has the chance to be done in those contexts where you are pushed to like be solidaric with like white fragility, or you know, how can we even conduct research then, or how, and also like both the links to capitalism that you mentioned with the organization, that they were like concerned that the research wouldn't show them in a good light because then they wouldn't get more funding, and also like how one as a researcher is tied to somehow being liked by the academic context one is in, because what you're mentioning there with grades. So it's really a question of like what research is even possible to go on with, or what is silenced here in this process.
Exactly. And this doesn't mean that there isn't research that's published, but this this just kind of questions the how many times was the research shrunk and in many ways gaslighted for it to be this to have this final product that caters to the white Finnish gaze instead of instead of actually producing important changing work.
Yeah, like knowledge and insights that actually could, like, as you say, help change happen, or like exactly. Be part of change also.
Yeah, which I guess takes us to the point of how exhausting and how ridiculous white fragility can be, to the point that it takes up a large aspect of not only my but so many other people's research, which in a way probably informed why I wanted to do this research at the beginning, knowing that I also was under the impression before coming to Finland that this is the land of quote unquote equality, and yeah, everyone has equal opportunities here and refugees are treated so great. And then you begin actually going through the process, and then you realize how this research, how these articles, how these, how this came to be.
Yeah, and that's also like I'm thinking of the decolonial aspect here of like how that's part of a how we need to like decolonize that. Image maybe of Finland, or how what equity and equality means needs to be decolonized also, not to reproduce what you're describing is reproduced very clearly.
Definitely, yeah. I completely agree. Yeah.
Mm. So I'm not going to push us to like stop on a positive note, because that would kind of be part of something we don't want to be a part of. So, but I want to like say thanks to you again for talking about this, and I hope that this also can be part of shedding light upon issues that really needs to be heard, seen, and talked about. And Astra is not part of, you know, everyday news media, but we're still part of Finnish media. So that's I think it's important to raise these issues also here. And
definitely, and to very much keep talking about them and, mm-hmm. and repeat as many times as needed. I think it's very, very important. And it pushes the conversation forward to share the experiences with other people, because this is how not only do we begin also understanding what we've been through as people of color in Finland, as non-EU people in Finland, but this is also how we begin to fight for different kind of change than one that is exclusive just to foreigners, in the sense of white EU or American or Western foreigners.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever Western means. Also another discussion. But yeah, I'm so grateful that you wanted to share your knowledge. It's so valuable. And I'm also so happy that we will meet again at your workshop soon.
Yes,
Astra team.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Me too. Yeah. And agreeing on what you said about like repeating, being reproducing what we want to reproduce. That's powerful to having.
Yeah. And not to say that it won't be without resistance, but that the significance of it will definitely outweigh the uncomfortability and the frigidity that most of the time it's met with.
Yeah, and when we meet resistance, we also need to support each other. I think it's so important also to let each other like rest in safe spaces when we can, so that we also like save ourselves for the fights that will come. Definitely. I think it's important to find that balance as activists and researchers and people who always make everything personal, because we are both activists and researchers and writers at the same time, and it's all, you know.
That's very true.
Thank you
so much for having me.
Thanks for coming, it was wonderful.